Welcome into Conversations. I'm Justin Earle. We will talk with Ryan Amundson about the Miracle on Canal Street, which is getting close to wrapping up. There's still time, though, for you to get involved in that. Meg McKenzie will talk with him coming up in about 20 minutes from right now. But I do want to welcome in now Ted Wachtel. He is the president of the International Institute for Restorative Practices. He's a former public school teacher. He's also one of the first educators to recognize the positive impact of restorative practices. What does that mean? Well, that's exactly what we're going to talk about, the difference between working with students and zero-tolerance punishment policies. We'll talk about all of that right here on Conversations. Clarify for me exactly what you mean when you say zero tolerance.
Well, you know, my understanding of zero tolerance is that it came about from policies in the 70s about drug use and abuse and possession, but it came to mean a much broader range of crimes. That is, anything that in a school context that was considered inappropriate, violent, you know, or troublesome. And depending on which school district you're talking about, some have instituted with, you know, consideration, and others have taken it to the point of absurdity. We've all heard stories about, you know, a little child bringing a penknife to school that he had in his pocket from Cub Scouts and getting thrown out of school, and, you know, things happening with someone even carrying something that faked as a weapon. Kids, you know, making, believing they're shooting with each other. Just all sorts of crazy, absurd stories. And then, you know, there are kids who've been violent and dangerous and are removed from school. And the idea was they weren't going to tolerate that. And they're, you know, the police are involved. So that was, you know, the range of ways that it was instituted. But in truth, it doesn't really work to change behavior. I guess I'd say I'm a pragmatist. I would like to know what works. What works to change behavior? Now, punishment can help change behavior while we're looking. So you impose these, you know, really severe sanctions, and it's possible you can have some impact. But how about getting people to change their behavior when you're not looking? That is, because they know it's the right thing.
Well, that's the death penalty debate right there. Is, yeah, somebody who commits murder might think twice about committing the murder if the death penalty is on the table, but it's not necessarily it's not a preventive measure.
Well, and honestly, the evidence on the death penalty really doesn't suggest it. I don't want to get off on that.
Right, right.
You know, murder it tends to be a crime of impulse, usually associated with, you know, some sort of intoxication or drug abuse. I mean, it exacerbated often. So I don't know if it actually prevents that.
Right.
In terms of schools, you know, what are we trying to accomplish after all? I mean, if punishment worked, I'd be all for it. I'd say, if you can reliably get kids to change their behavior using punishment, then why not? If it works. But it doesn't. There's no evidence to support that it doesn't. In fact, if you stop and think about it, a punishment is a very passive thing. You get punished. So the person who does something wrong is chastised verbally, you know, given a sanction. They don't have to say anything. They get angry at the authority figure. They think they're the victim.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think about what they've done to other people. They're not asked to reflect on that or to think of how they can make things right. They're just, in most cases, sent out of the school for some period of time or permanently, or arrested, as the case may be.
Well, and that's, speaking anecdotally, that was the thing I experienced growing up, was the kids who didn't want to be in school were the troublemakers. They got suspended, which made them happy, or in some cases, they were expelled, which was fine with them because they didn't want to be there in the first place, but they're also losing all of those benefits that come with being in school.
Yeah, and the thing is, kids really don't know how they've impacted other people. If we want to do it, as educators, and I've been working with delinquent and at-risk kids for the last 35 years. I left my job in the public schools because I was really, both my wife and I started programs for delinquent and at-risk youth and had great success. And there was a lot of our research supports the fact that you can change behavior by holding people accountable, but in a way that actually makes them take responsibility. I'll try to do it succinctly. We use a process, whether it's informally, off the cuff, in a little more serious setting with a few people, what we would call an impromptu restorative conference, a little more structured still, restorative circle with a greater number of participants, on up to a very formal restorative conference. And all of these are events are about creating an opportunity for, first of all, people to gain some understanding of what happened. Victims are often, even of relatively minor events, are often helped a great deal by getting to be part of a process where they can express their feelings, and ideally they hear some remorse on the part of the offender. And offenders are really given an experience where they have to be face-to-face with the people when that they've harmed when you send them off. So the simple version, we have these little business cards, and they're available actually through our website. I'm not trying to sell cards, just somebody interested in what they say. The safersanerschools.org website, and we also have restorativepractices.org website. But these little cards, we give them out generously, and it's about these questions. When somebody does something wrong, asking that person, what happened?
Yeah.
And the silence is what we as adults don't do. I'm a pretty talkative guy, and as a school administrator and as a young teacher, I tended to fill the air with the sound of my own voice when I was confronting a kid, instead of giving them the responsibility and the space to take the time to talk about what they did. And also, in some cases, it helps them clarify something that we might have misunderstood, of course.
Yeah, well, and that's the same thing I hear from people who go into, say, into a psychologist role. One of the things they have to learn how to do is learn how to engage the person so that they are teaching themselves more than you are just lecturing, because lectures don't work.
No, they don't. And they get people, you know, whether they're doing it visibly or inside the head, they're rolling their eyes, speeches. So what happened? And then what were you thinking about at the time? Now, we have an inclination to ask why, but the truth is people don't know why they did impulsive, foolish things. And it's kind of a wasted question.
Yeah.
There's more value in asking, what were you thinking about at the time? Because it gets around the circumstances that was going on with that young person when they acted inappropriately.
Well, yeah, it's a much more pointed question than just saying, what were you thinking, which is almost a blow-off question. By the way, we're talking with Ted Wachtel. He is the president of International Institute for Restorative Practices, talking about different ways to help kids understand that in some cases they've done something wrong and prevent those sort of actions going forward in the future. And I do want, and the reason I brought Ted on to talk about this on the program is because obviously we've had some significant issues here in the Milwaukee area with bad behavior of kids, in particular a couple of big brawls and gang-related brawls at Bradley Tech, and they've instituted lockdown procedures and zero-tolerance policies. And so I want to talk about why zero-tolerance may not be the best option.
I'll tell you a gang-related story shortly. I'll just finish running through the restorative questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, please.
What happened? What were you thinking at the time? Not why did you do it? And then who do you think you've affected? How do you think you've affected them? And what do you need to do to make things right?
Well, and it's interesting about those questions because they may not have an instant answer, but they're forced to think about it.
Well, they are. And sometimes, you know, they've never thought about that. And it just opens up their heads. And sometimes when they start talking, they go, oh, well, I guess I've affected my parents and all the other people besides the obvious victim. At any rate, asking those kinds of open-ended questions really is much more active than just throwing a kid out of school. And then the other people are asked on the flip side of the card are the questions you ask of those who've been affected. And it can be the direct victims or people like parents or others who care about the people who were harmed. And it's questions like, what did you think when this happened? And what was the hardest thing for you? And just questions that allow people, essentially, by listening to each other and creating a safe place for people to talk to each other, they start to gain an understanding of how everyone's been affected by the incident. Now, you know, many schools have adopted this, but they're in a situation where they have to do certain you know, suspensions and expulsions for a certain type of offense. Okay, I mean, you know, I'm not sure that you have to do that, and there aren't some other things. Although in some cases, kids who've done something really, you know, there can still be sanctions. But the idea that you come back from the suspension and go right back into the classroom with nothing resolved, it's a setup for more problems. But what if you ran a restorative circle and got those people involved, which we've done in many, many schools routinely, where people actually have an opportunity to clarify what happened, to resolve feelings, and it's amazing how it works. I mean, it's, you know, it's amazing how many times it works out extremely well, and the young person who's done the harm really changes their attitude, and they go back into that space, you know, with an appreciation for how they affected other people. Yeah, and there was an incident. I promised that I wouldn't share any details of the name of the school, but it was in a major city. I think I'm allowed to say the city. It was Detroit, where there was a gang-related incident, and they actually ran these kind of processes after. And people were amazed by the degree of reconciliation and the degree of sincere, you know, apology and mutual understanding that came out of it. And it really, you know, had a huge impact on the tensions that were occurring. You know, kids joined these gangs for a sense of belongingness. And when you can break down some of the suspicions and hostility that goes on, you know, we've worked in very tough schools. And I wanted to add one other thing that I forgot to say.
Please.
And that's that we also emphasize the proactive. So restorative justice is a name. Many people are doing this. We're certainly not the only ones for responding to the wrongdoing. But when we go into work with schools in what we call our whole school change program, we actually start with running proactive circles, just opportunities. You don't take a lot of class time, but you give people a chance to get to know each other in ways that they don't with the teacher-centered classroom and everybody's focused on the teacher. Just quick check-ins and things that can be very purposeful, like what would you like to get accomplished this week? What are your goals this week? And then a checkout at the end of the week. How did it go? Did you accomplish? You can do quick things about, say one nice thing about the person next to you, or what did you do on your summer vacation on the first day of school? It doesn't matter, but when you begin to have people have opportunities to learn things about each other, that's at the heart of how you build relationships and how you build community and how you get social capital.
Well, I was going to ask you, how, too, do you institute this in a school? Because it's not one of those where you just want to drop in the program and pull out the guards because, like the schools that I mentioned we have here in Milwaukee, I mean, there are significant outside threats of violence to these schools as well.
Absolutely. No, I mean, you know, this isn't a naive, oh, let's all be, you know.
Yeah, touchy-feely, yeah.
Hands and sing kumbaya. It's about a strategy for building relationships along with what would be sensible safeguards. You don't start asking the restorative questions right after people have had a severe fight, you know, although depending on the circumstance, it might not be long after, but you use good judgment.
Yeah.
But essentially, the results are amazing. I mean, we have research results. There's a booklet on our safersanerschools.org website, that 36-page booklet from schools, some of the toughest schools in America. There's school districts in Canada, from the city of Hull, which was unkindly called by the BBC the worst city to live in the UK, where we went into the worst high school in the worst city in the UK. And within 6 months, suspensions and expulsions, they call them exclusions, dropped by 60%. But interestingly, teacher absenteeism dropped by 60%.
So the teachers weren't afraid to come to work anymore.
Yeah, and I think that the thing that people have to understand is once that you get this going, it can be sustained, but it's got to take an effort on the part of the administration. There's got to be a commitment on the highest levels of the schools. So we went into West Philadelphia High School, which was viewed by the media in that city as the worst high school, whether that was in fact deserved. But they had fires lit every day. They were on the persistently dangerous list for 6 years in a row. And within 6 months, similarly, they had a drop of 50-some percent, another 45% the next year. And the results speak for themselves.
Now, yeah.
I'm not taking credit for it. You know, we worked with a really, you know, hardworking administration.
And it also comes down to the teacher level. By the way, we are talking with Ted Wachtel. He is the president of the International Institute for Restorative Practices. You're listening to Conversations, and I'm Justin Earle. And actually, the one thing I wanted to ask you, too, about implementing this kind of a program, you know, we're cash-strapped here at Milwaukee Public Schools, and that's one of the things that we would love to put in a program like this, but, I mean, where does the funding come from? How much does this cost? And is it, I mean, yeah, the results are great, and that's what we want, but can we afford to do this from a fiscal perspective?
Well, our approach is pretty cost effective, because what we do is we go in intensively at the beginning. We use a 2-year approach, and there are schools that have found the money. It depends on the size of the school. It can be anywhere from $40,000 to $70,000 or $80,000, depending on how much travel expense. But
sure.
It's over a 2-year period. And one of the critical things that we do is we train trainers in the school. So once we've done it, and we've got a bunch of people who are beginning to develop experience, we train them to do the training subsequently with new staff, and we can even work with them to design a program to train other schools in their district, so it can become, how should I say, it can go viral.
Yeah.
We're about doing things cost-effectively. We also run a graduate school, so people, after they've done the professional development, teachers need graduate credit. Some of them can add on online instruction to their professional development to turn it into a credit-bearing course, which they must do anyway in most states for their certification or to move up the salary schedule. And this is the kind of education that will reinforce what they learned on those professional development days. We also set up little professional learning groups in each school, groups of 8 to 12 people, where they meet once or twice a month for a quick 40-minute meeting and just check in. What have you tried since we last, got together, share stories? They do a little bit of education, maybe discuss several pages from a book or a video they watch, and then some problem solving. Somebody has a problem, you share your ideas, and then a checkout on what you're going to try in restorative practices by the next meeting. There's a range of restorative practices.
Yeah, and what I love about this is that it's not just one answer, and that's I think what the zero tolerance policy was designed to do was to give that one answer to the problem, the one single solution that, okay, you do something wrong, you're out, whereas this is a multifaceted approach, which absolutism is really hard to do when it comes to kids.
Exactly. And, Milwaukee has done, at least my understanding is there's been some restorative justice work. I don't know if anyone's taken on the whole school approach that we've done. At least I haven't heard of it. We do have the other thing we do to make things more affordable is we create affiliates. So we have on our website, you can look up our affiliates. I'm having a senior moment here. The name of the woman in Wisconsin who's working, it's not in Milwaukee, but it's, I think in the central part of the state, where she's actually taking on the responsibility of delivering our trainings. And of course, once again, when it's local, it makes it less expensive. There's not all the travel expense and hotels and such. So our dream is to create a network of people who are knowledgeable about this, who can train people. We've developed very rigorous training programs with good resources, films, books, and the like, but to do it in a way that we can actually afford it as a society, because it's something that's so important. We need to make it cost effective.
Yeah, and it ultimately it addresses things that our kids need for the future, and it helps our kids get set for the future and not squander the opportunities that they're given, the amazing opportunities in public schools.
By the way, there's a little video that people might enjoy, your listeners might enjoy, on our SaferSanerSchools.org website. It's a 9-minute video, no narration, just the 2 administrators, 3 teachers, and 6 kids from West Philadelphia High School talking about what that experience meant for them.
There's a lot of great information. You can find it at restorativepractices.org, restorativepractices.org, or go to iirp.edu. Both those websites will take you to all the information you need to know. Learn more about the International Institute for Restorative Practices, the graduate school, the programs that they do, and there's a wide variety of things that restorative practices do. And it's a very fascinating program because, as I say, we've seen a lot of behavioral problems, both as it was covering schools in the Madison, Wisconsin area, because there was an influx of people from the Chicago area and a lot of gang activity that drew up with that. And it really did cause a lot of problems. And school administrators were at a loss because they were hamstrung with zero tolerance policies.
That's right. That actually exacerbates it, creates a lot of resentments. Not to say that there aren't times when you do need to get kids out of the school. They're so dangerous. I don't, you know, want to be naive. But those are very rare that kids are that dangerous.
Yeah, if a kid brings a gun to school, yes, that's something different than a kid happens to have a, you know, a Swiss Army knife that they got at Boy Scouts the week before.
Exactly.
So you can check out more, and I do recommend it because it sounds like a fascinating program, and there's a lot of information here. If you're a teacher that's more interested in bringing this into your school, you can find out more about the master's degree program there as well. IIRP.edu, IIRP.edu, to find out more about the International Institute for Restorative Practices or restorativepractices.org. Ted Wachtel, the president of the International Institute for Restorative Practices, former public school teacher, and now very involved in helping make schools better and safer. I want to thank you for taking a few minutes and talking about this program with us here on Conversations.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity.